What's going on? What's going on? What's going on? This is your boy, Jay Will, your host of the Jay Will Podcast. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be used or considered to be a legal, health, or tax advice of any kind. We are not responsible. Let me say that again. We are not responsible for any losses or damages that may arise from the use of this podcast. To donate to the podcast, you can do so via the homepage on rss.com via the donate feature. Or you can do it via Cash App, which is $JWillPodcast. Follow my music page, James Williams Music. And also, if you haven't done so, ladies and gentlemen, go to your Play Store and download the Live 365 app. The Live 365 app is a free app. And type in JWill Gospel Radio, and you can listen to my gospel radio station 24 hours, 7 days a week. I have artists from all over the world. In America and international artists, I have gospel rap, I have gospel urban, I have gospel choirs, you name it, I have quartet, you name it, you can hear it. And if you're a gospel artist and you want your music potentially featured on one of my shows, the J. Will Gospel Show, the Unsigned Artist Gospel Show, you can shoot me an email at leewill@gmail.com. This podcast is brought to you by Charlie's Music Factory. For all your music and production needs, hit Mr. Chris Crane at charliesmusicfactory@gmail.com. All right, ladies and gentlemen, homies and homettes, boys and girls, cats and dogs, I have on the horn with me right now is the Honorable, the Judgeship, Judge Rich Moore. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back on. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And let me tell you, I'm kind of nervous at the same time. I started to put on a suit.
I was like, I'm glad you didn't.
I would have felt bad. I got your honor on in the virtual studio with me. You know, I think you're the first judgeship that I've had to interview.
Is that right? Well, I told you when we ran into each other at church that, you had me on during the campaign before anybody would even shake my hand. So I'm happy to be back. Now I'm on the other side of that journey, and we'll be back as much as I can be. So I appreciated the support during the campaign, and I haven't forgotten about that at all.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, ladies and gentlemen, just in case you don't know, Judge Moore is the judge for the first District Court of Appeals.
That's right.
Here in Cincinnati, Ohio. So if you can, so let me go back just a little bit. So when you were campaigning, you were, you know, running for your judgeship, if you will. And we talked about you being the first African-American judge to be appointed to this seat. How have you found, you know, has it been challenging since you've made the transition?
So let me kind of back up. And this is maybe a little bit of inside baseball, but I'm the first elected. So there was another judge that was appointed several years ago by then Governor Strickland. But when he ran to confirm his seat, he did not get elected. So I'm the first African-American elected. But it's been great. I mean, my colleagues are great. All of us are Democrats. So, you know, we're all of the same party. And so it's much different than what it was, you know, even a few years ago. So going back to 2016, the demographics in the county started to change, maybe 2018. And Hamilton County used to be a pretty solidly Republican county, and Republican candidates, pretty much all the judges were Republican on both the trial court and the court of appeals level. And then that, you know, ceiling started to crack a little bit. Judge Zayas, who's the most senior judge on the court, she was the first of kind of this wave to come into the court of appeals. And she was elected in 2016. And then in 2018, we had two others elected. And then, a third. And so fast forward, here we are in 20, when I took the bench this year in 2025, in February, there are six judges on the Court of Appeals, all six of us are Democrats. So I think it's definitely a different vibe in terms of the collegiality. I don't think you have kind of the, and you shouldn't have this anyway, but I wasn't there, but I heard, you know, there was some friction between the judges of different parties in the past. And maybe it wasn't party related, maybe it was personality. I don't know. I wasn't there. But right now, you know, 3 months in, it's been great. Everybody's getting along. I mean, we don't all agree on everything.
Right.
But, you know, when we disagree, it's cordial and polite. You know, make your point. You say, I'm not feeling that. So I'm going to go ahead and dissent. And they're like, okay. And, you know, we just keep it moving.
You know, you would expect for mature adults to be able to disagree and still be civil.
Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah. Yeah.
You know, so kudos to you guys for, you know, I mean, personally, I wouldn't want to be talking and associating with somebody that agreed with me on everything I said and did.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of scary.
It is. I found that there's generally two sides to most stories, and I'm always surprised because I get focused on, okay, this is the way it is, and then I try to make a point of you know, not necessarily legal stuff, but anything generally to try to find something that the other side is saying about it, and you know, you read what the other side said, you may not agree with it, but at least you understand the points that they're making, and you know, whether or not those points, you know, hit or not, at least you have an appreciation for what their position is. And usually there's something to be, you know, gained from understanding what the folks on the other side of any issue are saying.
So prior to winning the election, you were a trial attorney.
Correct.
In private practice, for two of the largest firms here in Cincinnati.
Right.
Man, I tell you, every time I read more about you, it's more amazing to me. Yeah, I understand that you are a graduate from Walnut High.
Walnut Hills, yep.
So you've been here in Cincinnati basically your whole life.
Yep. Grew up here. And the only time I left to go away to college. And then I worked in Cleveland for about 3 years, about 7 years. And, you know, college, I bounced back during the summer. So,
yeah.
You know, it wasn't all 4 years I was gone. But, you know, call it 7 years I was away and then came back and started my practice. So, yeah, Cincinnati is definitely home.
Yeah. So, that would have been back in 87.
Graduated high school. Yeah. Graduated high school in 83, college in 87. And then came back to law school in 90 and then graduated in 93 from law school and started practicing here right there in 93.
Yeah. So you went to the Cincinnati College of Law.
Yeah. University of Cincinnati College of Law. And a lot of my friends, or a number of my friends from high school had gone to law school there. And I was like, yeah, let me take a run. And see how it would work out. Because at that point in my life, you know, I had those that flexibility because I was single, you know, didn't have any dependents. So it was an opportunity. It was kind of, you know, it's one of those times in life where you're at the crossroad. And it's like, okay, I can keep doing this job because I was working in Cleveland. It was a nice job. You know, I was working for the phone company. And it was one of those jobs that, you know, as long as you didn't really mess up, you could pretty much hang in there until you retired. And so I was kind of staring down that road of, do I keep down this way or do I do something else, and decide to go ahead and make the leap to go to law school. And I'll tell you, some of the best advice I got was, there was a woman who was working for the phone company who had gone to law school part-time, which is what I was going to do. I was going to go at night at Cleveland State. And I ran into her at some event and introduced myself because I knew that she had, you know, gone down that path. So I introduced myself and started talking to her. And she was like, look, if you're going to do it, jump in with both feet. Don't do it part-time. Go full-time and give it your all. And that was, I think, some great advice and, you know, kind of put me on the path to be in the trial lawyer.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. So you also served as a president of the Black Law Student Association.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Well, I got recruited into doing that because somebody needed to fill the seats. Some folks came up to me and asked me to step into the role, but it was good. I mean, we put on some good programming, did some, you know, exam prep. We brought in some speakers, you know, it was a good, and it was kind of a continuation because, you know, undergrad, you know, I was president of the frat, I was president of the Black Greek organization. And so it was kind of a continuation of similar roles that I've had. So yeah, I think we did some good work during my time as president.
So you were in a fraternity?
Yep.
So you got branded on your arm with the Greek?
I did not get a brand. I came close, but never did actually do it. So so a couple of my line brothers did, or at least one of them did, and so yeah, I did not.
Man, I just can't imagine sitting down there and let somebody put a hard iron on my arm.
Nor could I, which is why I haven't got it.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So as an attorney, you were selected to for inclusion in the Ohio Super Lawyers program. What, tell me about that. What is that? The inclusion in Ohio Super Lawyers.
Yeah, I mean it's a you know, I'll say it's an honor, but you know, it's an organization that they'll put polls out to other lawyers and with names of lawyers, and you select the people that you think are doing a good job at whatever they do. And you know, I'm pleased to have it, but you know, what's the sauce? I don't need a statue to tell you how nice I am. So it's, I mean, it's good, but you know, the thing that was always funny about that is you get that. And the first time you get it, it's because the first time they started doing this, I wasn't on the list. And when I was at the firm, the lawyers that were on the list, you know, the firm made a big deal out of it. They got the picture taken, blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, I wish I could have, you know, be a super lawyer. Wouldn't be a super lawyer. So I finally got, you know, selected as a super lawyer. And, you know, it sounds good, but, you know, at the end of the day, what it amounts to is you get a bunch of ads for plaques that you can buy to say, you know, I'm a super lawyer. And so you pay, you know, X amount and you get this plaque that says you're a super lawyer. And so these things come in the email. So it's, again, I appreciate the recognition, but it's kind of a marketing thing too. You know, they're coming behind that, selling you stuff. And then they, you know, they approach your firm about taking out an ad in their publication. So, you know, it's a money making hour. It's not like the Nobel Prize.
So, well, I mean, when I hear super lawyer, I'm thinking, you know, there's a crime being committed and Judge Moore jumps out the thing. He comes out the phone booth.
No, sir. No, sir.
You know, but we don't have phone booths no more. I mean, I guess Superman he'd be in trouble.
He'd be in bad shape.
And
plus, how are you going with all the phones and whatnot? How would you get away with that these days? You know,
he had to run to the restroom in a T-Mobile store. Oh man, that's funny. So you were on the board, served on the board at Taft Museum of Arts.
Yeah,
tell me about that. How'd you get that gig?
It's kind of a it ends up kind of feeding on itself. So I was on the very first board that I was asked to join was the Urban League. And, you know, I was in my early 30s, I think it was even before that. I think I was not too far out of law school. But anyway, because I knew some people, and they knew me, and they were looking for people to serve in that position. So, you know, I raised my hand and got to be on the board of the Urban League, and eventually became board president. And so then you get into the, you know, kind of network when people are looking for board members, other board members are talking about people they know. And so I think my name started to get in the mix of that, of those names that got floated out there. And so I'd been on a couple of different boards here and there. And one of them was the Mercantile Library, which is an organization here in Cincinnati. It's a beautiful facility. If you haven't checked it out, you should definitely do it. But anyway, so I was on that board. And the executive director was friends with the executive director at the Taft, you know, they, the woman at the TAF was talking about needing board members. And so my name came up and I got on that board. So that's been, I think I'm just finishing up my 3-year term. So I've been on there for about 3 years. So yeah, it's a good organization. They've done a lot to, I think, open up the museum to a larger segment of the community. They just had, I can't remember the brother's name, but he was a rapper who was the artist in residence. And so he came in and, you know, he performed, he gave some talks, he gave some workshops. And so they're doing stuff like that to bring in different members of the community. And, you know, a lot of things that one of the things that people may not know is there's a very famous artist, Duncanson. I can't remember his first name, but he's a black artist, you know, back in the 1800s somewhere. And he, you know, has these beautiful murals that he painted that are in the Taft Museum. So if you go in there and, you know, you go into the house, you'll see these beautiful murals that Duncanson painted. So it's got a lot of history behind it. And that's the house that the former president, I think it's the former president, lived in. And then they have expanded it. So, you know, some additions on it that include the museum. But yeah, it's a great institution, a lot of history there. So, yeah, I've enjoyed my time there.
Wow. So what is the Mercantile Library Association?
So the Mercantile is a membership library. So you gotta be a member. Now, there's no real selection process. You just have to pay. I think membership is like $80 a year. And it's in this beautiful space in the Mercantile building. And it goes back to 1895 maybe, but so back then they didn't have public libraries. Most people didn't go to college. And these guys, because the formal name is the Young Men's Mercantile Library Association, I think it's called. And these young men who had come out of, you know, high school basically and didn't go to college but wanted to continue their learning would just get together, share books and exchange ideas and talk and listen to lectures. And that's, they formed the society. And they eventually moved into this space that's the Mercantile Library. And today it's not only a lending library, so you can go there and get books and books on tape and things like that, but they also have a bunch of lectures that they bring in. One that they had, when was that? Last year was Percival Everett. He's a guy who wrote James. And James is a retelling of Huckleberry Finn from Jim. Jim is the slave in the story. And so in Twain's version, you know, it's Huck Finn, and then he's traveling with Jim, the slave. And so, you know, he's got kind of a back. He's a secondary character. Everett flips it. And so James becomes the primary character. And so he tells the story. It's a great book. But anyway, just won the Pulitzer Prize is why I bring it up. It just won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction. So it's amazing. But they brought him in. They're bringing back, what's the dude's name? He wrote The Underground Railroad and Nickel Boys and... couple other Harlem Shuffle. He's got a couple other crime books. His name will come to me. I'm sorry, I can't remember it right now. But he's coming in to talk this fall at their big lecture, the Niehoff lecture. And then throughout the year, they'll bring in people to talk about different topics. And they had a what they call their Words and Music series last week, where they brought in Fred Hirsch, who's a well-known Cincinnati jazz pianist, and he wrote a book a few years ago. And so he read some excerpts from his book and then played a few pieces on the piano there. So I found it to be very cool. And frankly, if it wasn't for me being on that board, I wouldn't be in the position I'm in now. Yeah. Because I met people through my service on that board that helped me get into this role that I'm in now. Wow. And in addition, and this is probably more important, the people that, you know, are part of that library are, you know, they're smart people, intellectually curious people. And so I'm around these people and they're talking about things I wasn't familiar with. They're talking about books that I hadn't read, authors I wasn't aware of, things I didn't know anything about. And so that sent me back to the lab to like, okay, let me find out a little bit more about this. And it really kind of piqued my intellectual curiosity. So, you know, I explored a bunch of things that I hadn't really thought about, went to lectures that were talking about things I didn't think I had an interest in, but I walked away learning something. And so it was this, it kind of ingrained in me this lifelong learning idea that, you know, there's always something to know. Cause I hate to be in a position where, you know, I'm in a conversation and I don't know what they're talking about. I want to be able to at least ask an intelligent question about what they're talking about. Yes. And so that involvement really, really benefited me. So it's a great institution. Like I said, it's not, you know, you talk about membership library. It sounds like it's some kind of country club or select group. It's not really. It's really open and welcoming to people who want to be part of it. And like I said, it's a great space if you ever get downtown and get a chance to go check it out. It's in the Mercantile Building, and they just refurbished the top floor of it, and it's a beautiful facility. But yeah, so that was you know, my involvement with the Mercantile, and I was on the board, ended up being board president, and so yeah, it's a great institution. Yeah, I'm trying to think of his brother's name that wrote the Underground Railroad. It's gonna kill me. It'll come to me before we end this show.
Well, you know, I mean, to your defense, and ladies and gentlemen, Judge Moore was not prepped for this conversation that we're having right now. I'm just throwing questions at him, and you can tell how brilliant he is because he's not really waiting or hesitating, saying, oh, let me think about this for a minute. he's regurgitating these answers, and he's a brilliant, brilliant guy to know, and I'm happy you got elected.
Well, thank you. I'm happy I got elected, too. I was telling some people I was cleaning up some papers, and, you know, I have my little notes and strategies and stuff. And I looked at my one piece of paper I had, and it had kind of two things, plan A and plan B. Plan A was me winning. Plan B was me not winning. And at the end, plan A, you know, I'd lead the firm, take office. Plan B, at the end of it, had a big question mark. So I'm glad it worked out, because I apparently didn't work out my plan B very well.
So we kind of run out of time. I know you got a busy schedule. But other things that I see you've done, you was the board chair of the cancer support community in Greater Cincinnati. How'd you get involved with that?
Kind of the same deal. In fact, a brother who was on the Urban League with me, he was on the board of cancer support and got me involved. And so that's how I got involved in that organization. Again, they're doing tremendous work. And what the organization does is it provides free, no cost, cancer support services to people who have cancer and their families. So cooking classes, Tai Chi, you know, groups for like the individual cancers, like prostate cancer, breast cancer. And, you know, you get in a room with folks who are going through the same journey as you. And they talk about, well, my doctor suggested I do this. Oh, no, my doctor said that's fine, but there may be some side effects. And if you do this, you can maybe avoid those. And so they're exchanging that information that you really can't get that kind of interaction on, say, Google. Right. And in addition, you know, all the support you get from, you know, learning to cook nutritional meals, going through it. And you're just around people that, you know, provide, because it's based on group support. So, you know, people are going through the same thing you are. You're kind of together and going through it. So they're doing some great stuff, all free. And it's a great organization. And I, you know, it's somebody comes to you and says, you know, I got cancer, or mom's got cancer, or something like that. For me, it was hard to respond. It's like, what, you know, what do you say to that? Now, at least I can say, do you know about cancer support? And give them some concrete thing that might help them along that difficult journey. You know, so that was a great organization as well.
So I want to park there for a minute, because I think that I've never heard of this organization.
Yeah. It used to be called the Wellness Community, but that probably is not going to help you out either, because the reason they changed it to cancer support, because nobody knew what wellness was. They thought it was a gym or something.
Yeah, but I think I would love to talk to the people who are running that organization and just try to put more of that information out there to the public via podcast.
Cool. I will reach out to them, let them know of your interest, because I know this was years ago when I was on there, but that was certainly something that they wanted to do. They wanted to be able to expand their outreach to, you know, the Black community and other minority communities who, because they're, you know, their offices out in Blue Ash, and they had another one in Northern Kentucky. So it's not really, you know, in the urban center, as they say. I would love to, you know, help them and help people get the get as much information as they can. Colson Whitehead. I had to cheat. That's why I was looking away. I had to go on my phone because it wasn't coming to me. I had to get it out there before we closed out. Colson Whitehead.
Yeah. Colson Whitehead.
Yeah.
He's
won two Pulitzers. Won two Pulitzer Prizes. Top prize in literature. This brother's won it twice.
Wow.
And so, yeah, he's an incredible writer. But I'm sorry, I jumped in on you.
No. That's perfectly fine. I'm not going to interrupt your honor.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Hey, look.
That's the thing. People read. You're reading the website, wherever you're getting your information from. But what's not on that website is all the L's, all the losses. I don't put all the losses on there. All the mistakes, all the stupid moves, all the close calls. I don't. You're not seeing that because there's not enough room for all that. So I always smile when people talk about all these accomplishments, and I'm like, well, you just don't know.
Hey, so what we'll do is the next time we have you on, you let me know when you're free, and we can talk about some of the L's.
Okay, we'll let the statute of limitations run a little longer, and then you can get on.
Because I'm a firm believer, and I know you got to go. I'm gonna say this, I'm gonna let you go. I'm a firm believer is that we learn, we have our best educational experiences because of the L's,
bruh. Absolutely. Let me just focusing on my experience as a trial attorney, it's the losses that taught me the most. You know, when I reflect back on those cases I lost, that's where the lessons came. The wins are great. I love it. But the lessons, the things that made me a better lawyer, better trial attorney, were those losses. I reflect on those to say, okay, this is where I made my mistake. Let's try not to let that happen again. So that you're absolutely right. Those losses are where you learn and grow.
Oh, absolutely. Me and my little brother used to play chess, and for years he can never beat me.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I was playing with a friend of mine who's an anesthesiologist, who's a brilliant guy, and he used to tear my head up playing chess.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was losing, I was learning. And so eventually I started beating Dr. Morgan, and he would get mad and throw the chessboard.
No, see, you can't do that.
My brother couldn't beat me. And my brother, I kept telling him, I said, to lose in chess is actually to win.
Yeah.
Because you're supposed to learn from your mistakes.
That's what they say. You either win or you learn. And so, yeah. But I'm glad to hear that you're a chess player, because I enjoy playing. I'm not very good, but I enjoy playing it. So we'll have to get over the board one of these days, and you can teach me a thing or two.
No, well, I don't know. I think I would just like to sit down with you and have a cup of coffee and play some chess.
Let's do it. Let's make that happen.
Hey, you let me know when you're available, and we can make that happen.
Okay.
So I know you got to go. Ladies and gentlemen, the Honorable Cincinnati's own Judge Moore. Thank you for coming out. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, may the Lord God bless and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you, and may the Lord God give you peace.